listener member of KPFT Houston.
This is 9.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
That sweet beat of Clouds Beneath Your Knees by Ray Lynch chimes in at 5 p.m. Thursday, and you have tuned in for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and is found only on Houston's community station, KPFT. That's right. You found us again, and or maybe for the first time. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and here we celebrate the power of story by placing a spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on voyages through windows of their souls and on fanciful excursions amid worlds of enchantment before hopefully returning us safely to the present. We're so happy you tuned your radio or your computer or your tablet or your phone to 90.1 right here on Houston's community station, KPFT. Now let's get to the reason you've tuned in tonight. Great stories. Tonight's teller started life in Woodville, Texas, in the heart of the big thicket of Southeast Texas. He escaped to Austin and earned a degree from the University of Texas. From there, he worked for the state of Texas on and off for 25 years before retiring in 2014. For the last decade, he was a judge of Social Security Administration disability cases from Texas residents. In 2017, Rick began performing at the Dockmore Storytelling Guild in Boulevardy, Texas, and he's been back there many times sharing his tales. Rick is currently the secretary of the Austin Central Texas Storytelling Guild. He was honored to represent the CTSG on the Rising Star stage of the 2020 Texas Storytelling Festival in Denton. He performed his own tales there, and by now, he's been the co-chair of the planning committee for 2021's conference. He's been the acting director for the conference. Rick was elected to the board of directors for the TSA last year, and he's super excited to now be the editor of TSA's newsletter, The Teller. I'm so pleased to welcome here tonight, Rick Davis. Now, Rick, how the heck are you? Have you finished your move to the pecan capital of Texas?
I'm doing well, Larry. Thank you so much. I love being down here in Seguin. It's almost 4 weeks today, but I don't think you're ever fully moved in.
No. If you've got someplace to cook dinner, you got someplace to lay your head and someplace to take a shower, you're probably pretty much that's going to be the thing you need right away. You've got puppies too. Are they happy with the move?
Oh, they love the big backyard. One reason we chose this home, it's got plenty of space and a nice new fence. They're just in heaven.
Well, they say fences make good neighbors, but I think they really just frustrate dogs. That's their main purpose, I think. Now, Rick, your bio gives us so many possibilities. There's Woodville, there's Texas born and raised, there's the university time. There's your time with the state of Texas. The stories you're going to give us tonight, what's the thread that connects them together?
These stories start with my grandfather reminiscing back about one of his brothers, and then he and I, when I'm a young boy. Then I move on to a story about me as a young adult, and then the final one is about a gentleman reminiscing about a older mentor that had been a part of his life. So this is about family and caring and supporting one another.
I think people listening would agree that family is the foundation of so many stories, even old stories, new stories. Family brings up importance. Now we're going to start right off with a story you call CJ and Paolo. Now I think this story comes from your grandfather, one of his six brothers who left East Texas in the early 1900s to join up with cattle drives in West Texas. So Rick, tell us CJ and Paolo.
My grandfather was one of seven sons. He was born in the 1880s, Hugh Franklin Davis. They all grew up in the big thicket of East Texas. One of his older brothers, a shy and gangly boy, Caleb Joseph Davis, was just uncomfortable around others and such social environs. He was not too fond of schooling, neither. Loved to work, though, be it timber, farming, horses or cattle. With all of its dense pine forest, it seems East Texas was just too confining. He longed for the wide open spaces of the West. Soon as he could, he left the woods for the West Texas plains, where he could work at his best skill, wrangling horses. There, known as CJ, he joined up with others working the cattle trails. His skills among the best, he was sought after by those trail bosses. You see, Texas had turned to cattle after the Civil War to get through the difficult period of Reconstruction. The first cattle trail herd moved from West Texas plains to markets in the north in the late 1860s. Scarcity of beef brought good prices, but moving those herds brought trouble. 2,500 cattle formed the average herd with 12 men and 70 saddle horses, a mess wagon, and mule team. They'd move about 15 miles a day. Each herd formed in three parts, the point, the flank, and the drag. Same cattle held relative positions each day. A good leader longhorn made the drive much easier, and when found, was brought back to lead year after year. Those cattle were wild at the start, even after days on the trail. Any docility was likely to vanish into crazy fear, a stampede. This was the greatest danger. A thunderstorm, a southern northerner, anything, everything would likely trigger a stampede. It'd be like all hell broke loose with 2,500 fear-demented demons trampling everything in their path. Now, Longhorn was near as nimble as a deer, running hard and fast. If those cowboys couldn't stop them, they'd wind up miles off the trail, so blown it'd take days to put them back in shape. Many'd be injured or dead. All lost valuable pounds. Stampedes were costly. The only way to calm them was to turn the leaders into a narrowing arch, get the cattle milling in a shrinking circle. But this was dangerous. The punchers had to ride with the herd, waving slickers, firing six-shooters, and yelling like wild men, anything to bend the lead. If a horse stumbled or a rider lost his seat, well, many came to an untimely end in stampedes on the cattle trail. CJ worked dutifully for one of those large ranches out on the plains, just out west of Big Spring. On the trail, he corralled horses during the day. CJ had his favored horse, a Palomino, he called Paolo. CJ loved working the trail and tending horses. He was loyal to his work and to Paolo. Together they shared an unspoken bond, respect, admiration, trust. On these cattle drives, some riders would mount on guard on lonely evenings. They would slowly ride round the herd, and as they did, would sing, keeping their charges calm, quiet, so as to prevent that stampede, saving men, horse flesh, and money. Monotonous or sad, those old songs told stories. CJ loved to do this, and many a night he'd post the evening guard and ride the resting herd with his beloved Paolo. On one drive, not unlike any other, while riding guard, CJ with his Paolo, he'd sing a hymn that took him back to his roots in East Texas. Now, back home, the Davis family would gather at reunion time, and at their parting, they would all form a circle, holding hands and sing of a promised place in heaven. In the sweet, by and by, we will meet on that beautiful shore, connecting those present and remembering those who no longer were. As CJ sang, Paolo would lift and nod his head, throwing his gold mane from side to side, it cascading over like a breaking wave on a sandy shore, his blonde hide fading to a rich chestnut brown on his rump, and that shock of golden tail he'd whip from side to side to the sound of his master's voice. Paolo's trotting gait was a prance, and that prance was a dance. What a sight they were! What a team they made, neath that clear starry night, in the blue moonlight. But those stars began to fade, the night sky turned black, cattle stirring soon were on their feet, wind howling, the herd began to run, wild and fast. CJ felt grit in the back of his throat. He pulled Paolo to make a cut to the outside. It was so hard to see, eyes blinded by dust, a sandstorm that carried its own lightning. Some said was a thunderstorm that sparked that stampede. The boss had him back on trail soon after sunup. Rain that followed that sand helped clear the air. The trail boss took stock, stood up in the stirrups and pressed on the saddle horn. He looked out first for that mess wagon to assure his men had their provisions and supplies. He called out, "Cookie!" "Yo!" was a response he heard. He next needed to know horses for his men were secure. He shouted out for his wrangler, "CJ!" But there was only silence. He wondered, hey, has anyone seen? Maybe he didn't hear. Where was? Again, he shouted out, "CJ!" Then the boss felt a sting in his chest. Pain. Anguish. He cried out, "Paolo!" That trail boss then brought up two young bucks, sent them back to search out, to see. As it always was, they carried water, bandages, rifles to end any suffering of the injured cattle, and they carried shovels. They found CJ and Paolo together. CJ and Paolo died there together. They were buried there together, and by blessed assurance, together they will always be. Together they will always be. As my grandfather told me this story, said the family hadn't heard from Caleb Joseph for such a long, long time. A world war had come and gone, more than 10 years past. He wanted, needed to know. He remembered the ranch where CJ said he'd worked and lived. Took a while, but was able to reach an old cowboy there. The old guy pondered for a while, said it'd been maybe 25 years or more, he thought, but he remembered CJ, even from way back then. That old puncher told my grandfather what he recalled, about a sudden storm in the middle of the night, with blinding sand and fire in the sky, raining mud that sparked a crazy wild stampede, and remembering the loss of a great horseman and his beloved steed. Weren't no death records from those lost on the trail, but there were memories, legendary stories of CJ, a dutiful, honorable life, full of work and loyalty, dedication, and love for his horse, Paolo. I tend to believe the family stories my grandfather told me. My daddy Hugh said that Caleb Joseph, CJ, was a hero of those old cattle trail days. Now, true heroism is remarkably sober, very undramatic. It is not the urge to surpass all others at whatever the cost, but the duty to serve others whenever the need. My grandfather closed his eyes. I thought he'd fallen asleep. But then I heard, in the sweet by and by, we shall meet on that beautiful shore. They say a ghost herd drives those cattle trails to this very day. And if this is so, then you know they're a-coming this way. Now, if a ghost can be spooked, there is surely a stampede. And there, out on point, is CJ and his palo, riding the wind and bending the lead.
Now, Rick, that is a fantastic tale there. You had one word in the beginning that, you know, I'm a cowboy poet too, so I'm going to remember this word. You said docility. I've never heard cattle talked about with the word docility. So I actually wrote it down here on the desk, and it will be appearing in something down the way. This is how these stories grow from one person to the next. Docility. That's pretty darn good. Now, your next story takes us right back to Woodville. In the 1950s. Now, this is a poignant tale, and I believe I've heard you tell this story before. It's called The Picture Show. Tell us The Picture Show.
Now, come with me, if you will. I'd like to tell you a story to take you on a journey over space and time, back some 60 years. Deep into the piney woods of southeast Texas, into the very heart of the Big Thicket. There we find a small village in the woods, a village that we shall call Woodville, where all the people seem happy, content in their daily routines, where there is an annual spring festival celebrating the dogwood in bloom, and it is always cool in the shade. Across from the corner of the Cornhouse Square, a grocery store, and there a five-year-old boy is placing bagged lettuce in a bin as quickly as Ethel can wrap them and hand them to him. For a five-year-old boy, Bubba was big for his age, a healthy boy, already well over 4 feet tall. Now Ethel said, "Boy, I hear your granddaddy a-calling you. Best go. I'll be finishing this here just fine." Bubba gave Ethel a big hug. "Ethel, I love you. You sure make the vegetables pretty." That was her job, to keep the produce aisle looking nice, moist and dry bins alike. Well, Bubba ran on and he said, "Oh, Daddy Hugh, you call me?" Mr. Hugh was there in his grocery every day. Seemed like he never missed a day. He looked at his grandson. "It's Friday, Bubba." Well, Bubba was excited. Oh, time for the picture show? Oh, boy. Bubba knew every Friday evening he and his daddy Hugh would go there. And Mr. Hugh said, "Now let Lee know you're going. Go and tell him. He'd be looking for you in a while." Lee managed the stock boys and those who cleaned the store each night. He was a key employee. Lee and Ethel helped Mr. Hugh look after Bubba every afternoon. There was no daycare in Woodville, but they kept Bubba busy doing tasks. But for Bubba, it was not that. It was play. Mr. Hugh and Bubba had to cross the street to reach the picture show a half a block west and directly across from the back side of that courthouse right on the square. First, though, at the corner was a service station, set back at an angle so cars could pull up to the pumps on both sides, and a street lamp out on that corner. It was a true service station. The attendant would come up to your window after you rolled it down. He'd greet you, fill your car with gas, put air in the tires, wash the windshield, and check the oil and water level in the radiator. Then he'd return to you with a big smile and say, "Thanks for stopping by before collecting your gas money." Now that station was set back as it was. It showed the side wall of the picture show building, easy to see with a narrow alley in between. Bubba turned to his grandfather. "What's that door, Daddy Hugh?" Bubba pointed to a door on that side wall, but it was about 6 feet up in the air. Sure, there was a rickety old metal stair that led down to the ground, and on the ground there, a pipe was coming up, about 4 feet, right up against the wall. It had a faucet at the top, but that faucet was downside up. A small sliding window was up toward the street on that side. Mr. Hugh told Bubba, "That's the door to the balcony." Bubba asked him, "Balcony?" Mr. Hugh said, "Yes, people sit up there to watch the show." Bubba said, "Oh, you mean balcony, like in big church, up behind where the singers sometimes go?" Mr. Hugh said, "That's right, Bubba." A wooden board was also there, nailed to the wall right above that faucet, a narrow white plank with hand lettering in black. Bubba softly mouthed each letter out, spelled COLORED. Mr. Hugh and Bubba walked on up to the ticket booth around the front of the building, facing the street. The man in the booth asked, "Well, will that be two adults tonight, Mr. Hugh?" Well, Bubba quickly tugged at his Daddy Hugh's shirt sleeve. "Hey, I'm just a kid." Mr. Hugh said, "It'll just be the two of us tonight, Bobby, me and Bubba." But Bubba was already in that lobby, drawn in by the smell of hot buttered popcorn. "Popcorn?" Bubba asked in an excited way, but even as he spoke, a full bag of warm popcorn was out in his outstretched hand, with Mr. Hugh right there behind him, handing the clerk a nickel. Because on Friday, everybody knows, it's all the popcorn you want for just a nickel. Walking down the aisle, they took a seat. Didn't matter if the movie'd started, because every Friday the show was always a Western, one pretty much the same as the other, played in a continuous loop. They called them spaghetti Westerns. However, Bubby was pretty sure he'd never seen any sketty offered up anywhere. Well, Bubba squirmed in his seat the entire show, twisting and turning and looking up to see if he could see anyone in the balcony. Anyone in the balcony that was up there to see the show that he was there to see. But he couldn't. So soon the scene on the screen was the scene they'd seen when he entered upon the scene. And Daddy Hugh spoke up that phrase so familiar. "This is where we came in." No sooner said, and Bubba was up, running up the aisle with that empty popcorn bag catching air, ready to be filled to the top once more. Because everybody knows on a Friday night, it's all the popcorn you want for just a nickel. Now, like many a summer night in Woodville, they stepped out into the street and were met with a dense fog, the kind of soupy mix that you'd form when the temperature and humidity were both hovering around 100. Converging in a way that droplets were just hanging there, thick and murky. You could just about slice it with a butter knife. They turned toward the grocery, Bubba and Mr. Hugh. Bubba again looked back on that side wall, seeing it now lit up by a naked bulb hanging just over that narrow white board with its hand lettering in black. The fog glowing bright over that board. Bubba pointed at it. "What's that sign say?" Mr. Hugh said, "That word is colored. You know, for people like Lee and Ethel." Well, Bubba quickly exclaimed, "Lee and Ethel are my friends." His Daddy Hugh responded, "Yes, they are, Bubba." He went on to say, "That door is the separate way where colored people go in to see the show, to sit up in the balcony." Bubba said, "Well, in Sunday school, we sing, 'Jesus loves the little children, all the children of the world, red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in his sight. Jesus loves the little children of the world.' Next time, can we sit in the balcony? That'd be fun. What color can I be?" Well, Mr. Hugh, let the quiet of the night address that question. Because most folks know answering every question from a five-year-old, well, you just can't. They walked on, but in Bubba's curiosity, he grew concerned. Walking up to that corner street lamp with its light casting down a beam in the fog, forming a bright, solid cone of light. As these men, the tall man and the little man, passed through that crisp edge of night and into those glowing, hovering droplets bright, the voice of an innocent child was heard. Bubba was to be asking that question that all others dared not. Daddy Hugh, why can't Lee and Ethel go in the front door? What's wrong with them? Again, Mr. Hugh just let the silence of the night be heard. The men crossed the street and were swallowed up by the blackness of the night, no longer seen, but they could be heard. And from that darkness, there was an answer to be told, like a beacon of truth spoken bold, to be seared into the mind of a five-year-old. Mr. Hughes said, "Nothing, Bubba, nothing is wrong with them." Two men talking, a grandfather making certain that his grandson learned to love before he could be taught to hate. There in the parking lot of that grocery store across the corner from the courthouse square in the little city of Woodville, where all the people seemed happy, content in their daily routines. Where there is an annual spring festival celebrating the dogwood in bloom, and it is always cool in the shade.
Thank you, Rick. Folks, this is Larry Thompson, and you're listening to great storyteller Rick Davis on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station, and 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget, KPFT's free internet on HD2, and meet your news and arts and entertainment needs. We're proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Our guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell. You tune in to Houston's Community Station 90.1 KPFT because you know you'll hear the finest, widest variety of programming in Houston. And it's people like you that make this possible. And folks like Rick telling a story like that. That's a remarkably thought-provoking story, Rick. When you create a story like that, do you have an end goal in mind? Are you just relating this this activity that happened when you were young?
I think looking back on a period of my life when segregation was everywhere you looked and not really understanding it because I had a part of my life, colored folk that took care of me were family. It set me apart from that. And looking back now, it's shocking, but it's good to share that history so people can learn.
That's a remarkable aspect of storytelling. You know, you could sit down a bunch of people and just say, hey, you know, this is what happened to me when I was a kid. But if you frame it as a story, and even to the extent where you kept yourself as just Bubba in that story and didn't reveal, you know, necessarily that it was you, There's power in storytelling, especially from a story like that. And I appreciate you telling this for us tonight. Folks driving down the highway in traffic time, and I guarantee somebody had to pull over here and that. That's something else. Give us an intro for your next story. You call it Going Home After Work, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't have to do with just being stuck in traffic out on the highway. So tell us what this story's about, and then let us hear Going Home After Work.
Well, each of us have some burden to bear in life, but many rise above their challenges to make the world somehow better through simple acts of courage and kindness. By this, we hold tightly to a sense of meaning and purpose. I was getting off late after a long day's work. I worked for a bank downtown in Austin for about a decade, beginning from the early 80s. It was right on Congress Avenue, the main street that led from the state capitol building, 12 blocks right on down to the Colorado River. Our building had been built in 1849 and back to an alley which ran parallel to Congress, just like most all old structures along there. It was 1988, and the lending and construction industries were suffering a long recession. As the internal auditor and compliance officer, a 35-year-old, I worked long hours, usually not leaving until early evening. Our front lobby doors locked at 2 o'clock, so at the end of each workday, employees exited through that back door in the alley. The recession had hit the trades and building craftsmen quite hard. Unemployment was high, and the banks had to conserve risk. There were many foreclosures and failed projects. Real estate values actually were declining. The temperatures in late November were quite chilly, so I bundled up in my coat and left out the back door. From that alley, I headed on down to the parking garage in the next block. As I approached the stairwell going up to my car, I had an encounter with a young teenager. He was hanging out near the opening, and as I walked toward the stairs, he approached and he pulled a knife. He said, "Give me your money." Well, I knew that petty crime had been on the rise, and I wanted no part of any violent confrontation. So I just handed him my wallet. "Here you go." Well, he starts to leave, and as he's walking away, I said, "Hey, wait a minute, you forgot something. If you're going to be out robbing people for the rest of the night, you might as well take my coat, you know, to keep warm." Well, this young kid carried a backpack, but was just in jeans and a t-shirt. He clearly did not appear to be too dangerous or prepared to be rolling people in the alleys of downtown. He just looked out of place, you know? This kid's looking at me like saying, "Hey, what's going on here, man?" He asked, "Why are you doing this?" I said, "Well, I'm not sure, but if you're willing to risk your freedom for a few dollars, then I guess you must really need the money." I paused for a moment, and then I told him, "Hey, all I really wanted to do was go get supper. And, you know, if you want, well, why don't you join me? You're more than welcome. Just follow me if you want." You know, I felt just maybe he really needed some help. So I began to walk toward a deli down the street, on side street there, 6th Street. I look back and I see that he's beginning to follow. By the time I reach that deli, he's walking next to me. Now I'm a regular there, and we enter and sit at a booth near the door. The dishwasher comes by, smiling, he says hi. The manager and then the waiter, all of them warmly greet me, you know, as we settle in. The kid's like, "Hey man, you know everybody here? You own this place or what?" I said, "Oh no, I just eat here a lot." He said, "But you're even nice to the dishwasher." I asked him, "Well, haven't you been taught you should be nice to everybody?" He said, "Yeah, but man, I didn't think people actually behaved that way." So I just put it to him. "In the end, what is it you want out of life?" Well, he reacted with a sad face. He either couldn't answer me or he didn't want to. Time to eat, and he was hungry. Must have cleaned out that free jar of pickle spears twice. We finished our meal and the bill came. I looked at him and, "Look, I guess you're going to have to pay this bill because you have my money. I can't pay. But if you give me my wallet, I'll gladly treat you." He didn't even think about it. He's like, "Yeah, here you go, man." And he handed me my wallet. So before we left the table, I reached in and I gave him $60. It's all the cash I had. Now in 1988, $60 was a lot of money, especially in those times. I figured maybe it'd help him. I really didn't know. But when I gave him that money, I asked for something in return. His knife. And he gave it to me. It's funny, when I got home and told my family what happened, you know, nobody wants to hear that you've been mugged or in danger. My family said, well, Rick, you're the type of man, if somebody asked you for the time, you'd give them your watch. I just laughed at that. I figured that if you treat people right, you can only hope that they treat you right. That is as simple as it gets in this complicated world. Yes, this young teen did trespass against me. And we are asked to forgive others for their trespasses in the hope that our own will be forgiven. Well, I know that forgiveness cannot change the past, but I do believe it can change the future.
Fantastic. So a guy comes at you with a knife. I remember those days of the 80s and the whole savings and loan and all that mess going on. Oh my gosh. I guess I'd like to think I would have handled it the same way, but man, and the fact that you had $60 in your wallet, that tells us something too. That's a high roller. He wound up with a high roller there for sure. Now, folks, there you go. That's Rick Davis. Story like that is exactly why you tune into So What's Your Story? He's doing a fabulous job tonight, isn't he? Every Thursday night, So What's Your Story is on KPFT, and our team is proud to bring you these storytellers. But we can't do it by ourselves. Well, let's talk about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Great place to learn the art of storytelling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month, 7 to 8:30. The next swap is just a couple of weeks away. And you can visit the guild website, houstonstorytellers.org, or the Zoom link. And for information on when they might be coming back in person storytelling too. Also, you can find on that website past programs of So What's Your Story listed under their menu radio program. You know, our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live are back in full swing as well, usually the second Tuesday of the month, and you enjoy astonishing stories there and get to know Houston's storytelling community. Another way to crank up your skills is look up Tejas Storytelling Association on the web or the National Storytelling Network. Now, Rick, I think I've heard you say that you welcome storytelling as a friendly alternative to truth. Now, can you boil that down for our audience? A friendly alternative to truth.
Well, I believe it was J. Frank Dobie that said, "Never let the truth get in the way of a good story."
There you go. There you go. Now, does this mean that you're one of those guys that does the liar's contest too, or are you pretty much sticking to straight up tales that tell things exactly as they happen?
Well, I'm pretty much a greenhorn to this. I think you'd have to be quite a pro to pull off one of those lying contests, but I sure admire those people. They're amazing.
Well, it's, I don't know. You can stumble your way through one of those sometimes. No, you can't. It takes some thought and some practice. Now, if somebody came up to you and caught you on the side somewhere and said, "Hey, Rick, I know you're a storyteller. I really think about a storytelling as well. What little nugget, what little piece of advice would you offer to that person?"
I would tell them that they should tell what they know. You tell your own story best. And when you do that, any fear that you might have would melt away when you begin to visualize that story in your mind and share that with your listener. That makes it a good story.
It sounds like from the stories that I've heard you tell, I think that's a nugget that you keep pretty close to your own heart as well. The stories that you tell, if you're coming from a place you know, it's going to be something that you're almost not even going to have to practice at or rehearse. It's just in you, and all you've got to do is get it out there for the world.
That's right.
That is something. Well, we've certainly got time for another one from you. This a piece you call The Gentleman Next Door. Now, this could go a whole bunch of different directions, but let's hear you tell The Gentleman Next Door.
The telephone rang. He could see it was his mother so early in the morning. He answered. His mother told him, "Mr. Belser died last night. The funeral's Wednesday." Memories flashed through Jack's mind like an old newsreel as he sat quietly remembering his childhood days. "Jack, Jack, did you hear me?" His mother tried to get his attention. "Oh, sorry, Mom. Yes, I did. It's just been such a long time. A long time since I thought about Mr. Belser. I'm sorry, but I honestly thought he died years ago." His mom remarked, "Well, he didn't forget you. Every time I saw him, he'd ask how you were doing. He'd reminisce about the many days you spent over at his side of the fence," that he's put it. Jack hesitated, and then he said, "I love that old house he lived in." His mom remarked, "You know, Jack, after your father died, Mr. Belser stepped in. He made sure you had a man's influence in your life." Now, Jack thought for a while. "He's the one who taught me carpentry. I wouldn't be an architect today if it wasn't for him. He spent a lot of time teaching me the things he thought were important. Mom, I'll be there for the funeral." As busy as he was, Jack kept his word. He caught the next flight to his hometown. Mr. Belser's funeral was small, uneventful. He had no children of his own. Most of his relatives had passed away. The night before Jack was to return home, he and his mom stepped next door to see that old house just one more time. Standing in the doorway, Jack paused for just a moment. It was like crossing over into another dimension, a leap through space and time. The house was exactly as he remembered. Every step held memories, every picture, each lamp, the pieces of furniture. Then Jack stopped suddenly. "What's wrong, Jack?" His mom was concerned, and then Jack spoke in barely a whisper, "The box is gone." His mom asked him, "What box?" There was a small gold box right there on the top of that roll-top desk. He kept it there, locked up on that top shelf. I must have asked him 1,000 times what was inside. All he'd ever tell me, "It's the one thing I treasure most in life." Jack said, "Now it's gone." Everything about the house was exactly as Jack remembered, except for that box. He figured someone from the Belser family must have taken it. Jack exhaled and said, "Now I'll never know what was so valuable to him." He then told his mom, "I better get some rest. I have an early flight home in the morning." It was about 2 weeks since Mr. Belser's funeral. When Jack returned home from work that day, he discovered a note in his mailbox. Reading it aloud to himself, "Signature required on a package. No one at home. Please stop by the main post office within the next 3 days." Very early that next morning, Jack was at the post office before it opened. Soon as it did, he retrieved that package. It looked like it had been mailed 100 years ago. The writing was difficult to make out, but the return address caught his attention. It read, Mr. Harold Belzer. Jack took it out to his car. He quickly ripped it open. There inside was an envelope and that gold box. His hands shook as he opened and read the note in that envelope. Upon my death, please forward this box and contents to Jack Bennett. It is the thing I valued most in my life. A small key was taped to the note. With his heart now racing, tears began to well up in his eyes. Jack carefully unlocked the box. There, inside, he found a beautiful gold pocket watch. Running his thumb slowly over the finely etched outside casing, he carefully unlatched the cover. Inside, he found these words engraved. Jack, thanks for your time. Harold Belzer. Jack could just catch his breath. He whispered aloud, the thing he treasured most, the time we shared. He held the watch for a few minutes and then he called his office. He spoke to his office manager. Franklin, please clear my appointments for the next 2 days. Now Franklin was concerned and he asked if everything was all right. And Jack just said, I need some time. Time to spend with my son. And by the way, Franklin, thanks for your time. Life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away. Larry, I want to thank you for the privilege of telling you my stories today, and I want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. The pleasure is all mine, Rick. We, we like to go through life at a pretty fast pace these days, and having an opportunity to sit down like this and hear stories is, it can't be replaced. Was your family a storytelling family around the holidays and dinner table and that sort of thing?
I had a very large family. My mother had 11 brothers and sisters. And she was the youngest daughter with only one younger brother. So there were lots of aunts and uncles telling stories. It was quite amazing.
Now, how do you get back to Woodville often? Do you have family still back there?
I've got first cousins all over East Texas and Southeast Texas. I do. And I'm actually returning to my 50th high school reunion in the end of April.
Ooh, now here's what we're going to need to do. So the 50th reunion is the end of April. So what we'll do is we'll put you back on the radio about 6-8 months from then. And we're going to be expecting to hear how that 50th reunion went. Those times when we gather family around the table, those times when we gather, unfortunately these days, we're just coming out of the pandemic and people are just beginning to get back together in person. That's where these stories need to be heard and told and grown from. Those are the seeds to so many of these stories. I definitely appreciate that you came on this evening to bring us some. Are you working on any new things? Anything else we need to be listening for when we hear from Rick Davis in the future?
I'm always working on the next story. I like to tell those stories that have some meaning and impact. But I would like to also learn some traditional folklore. And there's something called Jack Stories that I've been trying to learn and tell. And they're quite humorous.
Definitely. Exactly. And the kids really go for those Jack tales because Jack can cause a little bit of trouble, and nothing seems to happen to him in the end. He gets away scot-free most of the time. Anytime you get one of those, you know, the native peoples have trickster tales, and folks in Appalachia had started out those Jack tales, and that's going to be those will be prizes that you're going to learn and keep and have in your back pocket to pull out at any moment. People love to hear those tales for sure. I know you're super busy. You and Gary just finished that move. You got the puppies running around through the house. Life is expanding for you. On the board of directors for the TSA. We just finished festival, in fact. Some of those recordings are going to be out there for folks to find. Do we still have a growing storytelling community in Texas and beyond?
It seems that storytelling has really caught hold, and people are learning to share what they know best. I think it has a great future. I'm excited about storytelling.
Well, me too, because I tell stories from time to time myself, and we're always, and that's what we do here on So What's Your Story? We're going to bring and keep bringing fine tellers like yourself to come back out. So I was only half joking. I'm telling you what, we're going to have you come back on the air as quick as our schedule is going to get us on there. But I guess it's probably time to start wrapping down. Again, I'm just delighted that you could be with us here tonight, and share some of these tales with us. Folks, this is what we all come to know and love here on So What's Your Story? And So What's Your
Rain and
Story
mud.
comes in on Thursday evenings, 5 p.m. when Ray Lynch cranks up with Clouds Below Your Knees. And we're wrapping up tonight's program, but keep it right here where it is, because there's a lot more great programming coming up next. And don't forget, you're listening to member-supported programming on Houston's community station, KPFT. And make 90.1 a part of every day, whether you're home or you're driving home or you're just chilling at the park. And be sure to join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? Check out the Houston Storytellers Guild online. Find those previous recordings out there. Folks, as good as Rick Davis was tonight, you're going to enjoy every one of them. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. My name's Larry Thompson. I'm the host tonight, along with the rest of our team. I thank you for listening, and remember what author J.K. Rowling says: no story lives unless someone wants to listen. Good night, y'all.
Olivia from Washington. Laid off and trying to keep our little kids from realizing that mommy and daddy haven't eaten in a while.
Roger from California. I'm grateful we could afford our son's surgery. I'm nervous that now we can't really afford food.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Donna from Louisiana. The storm just hit, and we went from donating to the food bank to needing it.
Keisha from South Carolina. I've been skipping meals so my two kids can eat, but filling up on water doesn't really work.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
90.1 FM, listener sponsored and commercial free, where you'll hear less talk and more music. KPFT, your Houston community station.
I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere. Somewhere, I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return again to you. The mist is lifting slowly, I can see the way, and I've left behind the empty streets that once inspired my life. And the strength of the emotion is like thunder in the air, 'cause the promise that we made each other haunts me to the end. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere. Somehow I'll return again to you. The secret of your beauty and the mystery of your soul, I've been searching for in everyone I meet. And the times I've been mistaken, it's impossible to say. And the grass is growing underneath our feet. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere, somewhere. Somehow I'll return again to you. You see, I know you're out there somewhere. Oh yes, I know you're out there somewhere. I know I'll find you that I remember from my childhood still are true, that there's none so blind as those who will not see. And to those who lack the courage and say it's dangerous to try, well, they just don't know that love eternal will not be denied. I know you're out there somewhere, somehow I'll return again to you. Yes, I know it's gonna happen. I can feel it getting near, and see you'll be returning to the fountain of our youth. And if you wake up wondering, wake in up the wondering, darkness I'll be there. You know I'll be there. My